If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
You reach a certain age. You have a lifestyle many would envy. Still, something doesn't feel quite right. Life has become routine. You sense there's more out there to experience and explore, with an urge gnawing away inside you to do something different. But what? Here to tell us a little bit more about what happened next is Catherine Barnes, author of The Unlikeliest Backpacker. Catherine, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning, Giles.
Thanks for joining us. So tell me a little bit about your life then, before you decided to, as the song goes, hit the road, Jack.
Yes, well, it's probably a very common tale. My husband and I had been married for a couple of years, and we lived and worked a real kind of city life existence in London. I think we were always just kind of like chasing our tails. And I think that we got to a stage where a lot of people get to, where we just felt very restless and felt that we'd been kind of caught in a bit of a trap. So we kind of, reached a bit of a decision point, I guess, a crossroads that some people might call an early midlife crisis, age 33.
Right, so both you and your husband are there, age 33, so what did you decide to do? Because other people would say, you know, perhaps we're going to, you know, I don't know, go around Europe or something, or, you know, just take an extended holiday. What did you decide that you wanted to do?
Okay, well, we were laying on a beach in Dubai. It was kind of December time. We were trying to get some winter sun, and I happened to be reading a book that was not as well known back then, called Wild by Cheryl Strayed. Now it's since become a lot more popular, and it was made into a movie with Reese Witherspoon in. But that book describes a lady's adventure hiking along the Pacific Crest Trail in the US. It's situated along the kind of western backbone of the United States. And I was reading that book, and it completely captivated me. My story was very different to hers, but that really kind of whet my appetite, and it introduced me to that trail that was out there. I had no idea of it before then. So on a complete and utter whim, having never backpacked anywhere in my life, I kind of made a bit of a spur-of-the-moment decision, sitting on a beach lounger in Dubai, and kind of turned to Conrad, who was next to me, and kind of said, look, I think we should do this. I think that, why not? I don't have a better plan. And kind of the rest is history. Within 5 months, we were hiking.
Now, We've all had these decisions on the spur of the moment, especially when we're sitting, you know, on a beach lounger. Perhaps there may have been a sangria or something stronger going around the place. And those sort of ideas when you... Perhaps, exactly. But those sort of ideas, once you get back and think, well, actually, it seems an awfully long way away to go. And you had no experience. You weren't avid hikers at the weekend. I mean, about as far as you went was to like I said, to top up your tent at the nearest beach bed.
Mm-hmm. I think that I blame the internet for this one. So obviously I had that initial spark triggered inside me, but when I got back home, I started going online and came across a lot of hiking blogs. There are a lot of people out there now who, especially in the US on some of the more popular trails, but also throughout Europe on the Caminos, actually hike and blog and also vlog on YouTube. So I kind of like entered this world that I never knew existed before, and it just completely kind of sparked a wanderlust. And the more I watched, I was kind of eating it up, and it just really got me excited. And then before I knew it kind of spiraled into the point of no return, and we had flights booked to the US.
And you weren't doing this on your own, so presumably Conrad is just about as guilty as you are as well with this one. Did he get captured up with the romance and the sense of adventure?
I think that there's definitely a joint sense of adventure. Conrad was always more of an adventurous person than me. He had done the whole university gap year thing, so he was a lot more of a offbeat traveller than me. But he certainly wasn't as convinced. He took some convincing. I mean, first of all, for one matter, he knew that I absolutely hate camping. So that was a little bit of a hurdle, and why our family thought that we were completely crazy with this idea. So he definitely took a little bit more persuading, but I definitely think that when he gets home from work and I plug in a YouTube video where there are absolutely amazing, spectacular sights and scenery, you know, I really was able to kind of paint a more rosy picture than perhaps I should have.
I mean, didn't you sort of do a little bit of training? Or you don't like camping, you said?
No, I absolutely hate it.
Right, well...
I had a terrible Duke of Edinburgh experience when I was a teenager and vowed never to camp again.
Well, I mean, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but the famous Pacific Trail, Crest Trail, is not known for its five-star, you know, spas with, you know, beach beds a la Dubai.
No, I mean, it's about as far away from Dubai as you can get in terms of luxury. It is camping in the dirt with no facilities whatsoever. We were lucky on an evening where we were anywhere close to running water. And when I say running water, I mean a stream that we had to filter water from.
So what sort of preparations did you do then? Did you just get sort of all the gear and then book your flights and head out then?
But my dad would say, all the gear, no idea. So that was basically us. So we actually didn't own, I don't think, any of the equipment that we needed before we started. So again, a lot of internet research. And I think a lot of the stuff we still hadn't brought before we reached the US. So in terms of training and kind of testing out equipment, we kind of really did leave it to the last moment. But we booked flights. We flew over to the US where we stayed, luckily, with my cousin and his wife. They're Californians.
Right.
So we flew out there and we had kind of a 3-week period to basically buy everything from all the local sports shops and do a few test hikes up and down their kind of closest state park. They've got a mountain called Mount Diablo. So that was really the only training that we did.
So explain to me, what was the first night like then? And did you actually think, oh my goodness, what are we doing?
Absolutely. I think I felt that way for a number of weeks. It wasn't just the first night. I think the first night we were very fortunate in that we ended up not camping alone. And I think that we camped alone probably about 90% of the time on the entire trail. But the first night we happened by a meadow where we were joined by two other solo hikers. So I think that we were both feeling pretty down in the dumps, and I kind of retreated into the tent as early as I could and I was writing my journal and really, I think, probably saying some very harsh words about Conrad. There was a lot of tension on that first day. So I was kind of squirreled away in the tent, and Conrad kind of went off and spoke to the other two hikers. He was the sociable one. And I just remember it was a brilliant June full moon that first night, and I barely saw any of it. I was just kind of like hidden in my tent, and I was just thinking, what are we doing?
What was the physical aspect like for you? I mean, how did your feet hold up, and how did your calves and all that sort of stuff?
Oh wow, it was harsh on our feet. I can't lie, our feet. I went for a whole up and down relationship with my feet, and Conrad had real problems, particularly at the end, because his shoes got switched out for a pair that were the wrong size.
Mm.
That was kind of a long story there, but that was a postal mishap. But the feet take a pounding, and for me, no matter how much training I think that you do up front, as soon as you strap a 30-pound backpack on your back and you're on your feet for kind of 10 to 12 hours a day, they're going to take a pounding. And my feet kind of developed a real new hard layer of skin that I'd never had previously. I was always a bit of a pedicure girl. And fighting blisters. I mean, it was pretty grim. I won't go into detail.
Some people won't have had their lunch to be at, Catherine, so please don't. Yeah,
I won't go into detail. Right. It was pretty grim, but yeah, your feet definitely don't appreciate the miles, but they toughen up, definitely, over the week, they toughen up.
You said a minute ago you had an up-and-down relationship with your feet. How was your relationship with Conrad? Because if you're going to get to know your partner, your significant other, then trekking hundreds of thousands of miles, kind of unprepared, into the wilderness, in a tent, that's going to put any relationship to the test, shall we say.
Yeah, I recommend it for any people who are maybe starting a relationship and they really want to kind of expedite that whole process and try and find out if that was the right person. It's a real challenge. Oh my gosh. I think at the very beginning, it was like moving in together for the first time. At the very beginning, you're really testing boundaries, and that was the hardest stage. There was a lot of tension, things that we hadn't anticipated. I remember for the first few days, I was kind of brewing away inside a resentment that I didn't think he was carrying enough in his backpack compared to me. So I remember that kind of all exploding into a mid-trail argument. And I remember one other particularly bad argument, but at the end of the day, you're both in the same position and you don't have anybody else. So any arguments have to be pretty short-lived. And I think that by the end of it, we actually kind of found our groove. We had our own kind of set tasks, our defined tasks when we got to camp. And for a lot of the time, it was quite a solitary kind of pursuit. We were hiking in single file, and we kind of run out of conversation. So you kind of get to a nice, comfortable place, really, in the end. And I appreciated that he was there ultimately.
I mean, how long is in miles? How long is the specific crest trail?
So in its entirety, it runs from the Mexican border all the way up to the Canadian border.
Blimey.
And the entire thing is 2,650 miles. Now, we didn't hike all of that. I want to make that clear. We hiked 935. We did the northern portion. So we started pretty close to the California-Oregon border. So we crossed all the way through Oregon and then into Washington State up to Canada.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that bear country?
Yes, it really is. It's not just black bear, but potentially grizzly bear territory as well, the closer you get to Canada. And that was certainly one of my biggest fears when I joined the trail. In the book, I dedicate a whole chapter before we start hiking to my long list of fears, and bears were pretty high up on that list.
So what did you take with you to combat bears? A large jar of honey, perhaps?
Yeah, so we were basically walking honeypots because we had to carry all of our food supplies. So we were the honey. I'd like to say that we had real protection, that we had like a bear spray or a gun, but no, we had nothing. We just had our wits about us, that's right. It.
And did you actually run into any of the cuddly creatures themselves?
We didn't, actually. I think that there's certainly a lot of evidence that they were nearby. At one point, a guy come running up behind us and overtook us, saying that bears were on the trail, just a trail that we had just gone along. And I actually have always suspected that we actually lured those bears onto the trail because we'd just eaten lunch.
Right.
So... and there were definitely prints in the snow.
Catherine, just a second there. If a guy runs past you saying bears are on the trail, presumably yeah. He's not running towards the bears.
No, he was running away from the bears, which is actually the number one piece of advice that you're given on all the safety videos. If you see a bear, don't run.
Right.
And he ran. So, they're apparently quite fast, but it's lucky they didn't chase him.
Well, just because I live in the countryside, and I live on next to a reservoir, and I remember my first night, because I'm off grid and I'm miles away from anybody, and my first night there, goats were knocking rocks as they walked into the water, making a noise and absolutely terrifying me because it was my first night there. When one is camping in bear country, how does one sleep?
Oh, wow. With difficulty. Definitely for the first few... I would say a few weeks, I used to lay awake listening to the noises of the forest, and there really are so many noises. It's amazing. Like, you think that a forest at night time would just be completely empty, but the wildlife, a lot of it comes alive. And there was one night in particular where something got really close to our tent, and it was a really heavy, it felt to me as though it was a huge creature. But in the morning, Conrad convinced me that it was probably elk.
Right.
But, you do lay awake. I did. But then I kind of got to a point where we had built up our daily mileage, and I was so exhausted that I would fall into the tent, and it's just not on your consciousness. You don't think of it anymore. You're out like a light.
What was your reaction like then when into that last day, when you covered those last kilometres, those last miles, and you finished your trek? The sense of achievement must have been absolutely overwhelming.
That's such a good question. I think that the last day, I didn't expect it to feel so bittersweet, because I'd spent the last 2.5 months counting down miles. And some days, especially if it was pouring with rain, I would live to just count down miles. So it was always, can we get to Canada? Can we make it? But on that last day, I knew with certainty that we were going to make it. And there was an overwhelming sense of achievement, but it just felt as though the end of something that I wasn't quite sure I was ready for it to end. And it kind of took me back a little bit. I wasn't... You know, it had become a lifestyle almost. It was quite a simple existence. You wake up, you walk, and your only concern is really food and water and making miles. And then that kind of all rapidly came to an end. And all those weeks of living in the wild were sort of over. And there was sort of this strange feeling of, well, what's next? What do we do now?
So... What did you do now that when it was over? I mean, this a trip like that, you hear people saying, well, it changed my life forever and I could never go back to doing a 9-to-5 job. So, you know, you get back to the UK. So what are you up to now?
Well, it definitely has changed me as a person. It definitely has moved something inside us. I think that we've become a lot more aware of the impacts that our surroundings have on our lives. Having said that, we are unfortunately still in London, pretty central London. But Conrad and I are kind of hatching a plan. We have been back for, 2.5 years. So in that time, I've written the book, which was kind of an unexpected thing that I hadn't planned on doing. And we've actually tried a few things to try and change our lifestyle. Conrad's joined a startup company that didn't quite plan out, but, you know, we're trying new things to try and kind of cut the tie with the corporate rat race. And last August, when we were back in the US in Glacier National Park in Montana, we discovered that I was pregnant. So that's kind of the next adventure.
Wow.
So that's what has delayed us from leaving London earlier this year. We're kind of waiting right now for our newborn, and then we hope to kind of start a new adventure as far away from London as possible.
I've got visions of a backpack, a papoose, a baby stroller, and all sorts of things happening.
You know what? I've been trying to convince Conrad to quit his job and buy a camper van and go to New Zealand with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that this coming winter could be the perfect opportunity to take a baby around New Zealand.
sounds like a perfect plan to me, Catherine. I'm sorry, you get my vote.
What could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? If you had to say one particular moment of your trek, which is the high point, what would you say was the high point? And also, why did you decide to write the book?
Do you know what? A high point is so much harder to define than the low points, because I feel like just the opportunity and the sights, every time we summited a new mountain pass and we saw a completely different landscape open up in front of us, it was, you know, like a whole host of those moments, those highlights, and they're visions that are so vivid, even in my mind now. I think that just generally having that sense of freedom and some of the people that we met, I mean, they're the highlights for me. We met strangers who completely lifted us up at times where we really needed some assistance, and for no ulterior motive, really helped us and kind of, you know, enabled us to continue. So there was one family, an Irish American family in particular, who did just that. We'd had a couple of really bad days of hiking through rain, and I was really close to wanting to throw it all in. I was so close. And we hiked into a lake resort somewhere, and a family just basically kind of picked us up, dried us off. They did our laundry for us. They fed us. And, you know, they set us on our way again. And it was really like, it felt like we had our own sort of trail angel helping us along.
If somebody's listening to this and thinking, you know, ooh, this sounds really good. I mean, yeah, but I've got a job, and, you know, and I'm in my mid-30s, I'm pushing 40, I'm in my 50s. You know, like, I really what would you say to them?
I would say that there's always excuses. If you look at things logically, as most people do, you'll always think of hurdles and obstacles to not doing something that you may kind of secretly harbour hopes of doing. Conrad and I, you know, we had a mortgage and we had jobs, and any sane, sensible people would probably have not pursued what we did. But I would say that I honestly don't know anybody who has taken time out and to go travelling who has regretted it. Like, nobody. And I know quite a lot of people who have maybe not done the same kind of adventure as we did, but who have gone travelling and taken time out and just gone to discover something new. And I would always say, you know, if you dream of something, now is the best time that you can just do it. No excuses.
The book is called The Unlikeliest Backpacker. It's out now on Hornet Books. It's by Catherine Barnes. Catherine, if people want to find out more about you or buy the book, do you do the social media thing? Is there Twitter? Is there Facebook? And can we get the book on the web?
So the book is available on Amazon to pre-order. It comes out on the 7th of March. And I'm trying to rein back on social media a little bit, but my original blog, which I wrote purely for my family, is on the website alifetowander.com, WANDER. So there are pictures of our hike, us looking terrible at our work. But if you want a bit of a laugh, you can go and have a look.
Well, I'm looking at a lovely picture of you now by a lake with some mountains in the background, which appeared on Twitter when I was looking for you. So there you go. The book is called The Unlikeliest Backpacker. It's by Catherine Barnes. Catherine, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you today.
Thank you.
Well done. And good luck in the news. I'm going to be looking out for adventures of a toddler in a newborn in New Zealand. How's that for a title?
Oh, thank you. Hopefully you have me back on to plug that one.
Absolutely. Catherine Barnes, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Bye.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.